vetoed a Palestine statehood resolution at the Security Council. Can you respond?
Yes, that tells you the contrast. On the one hand, you have the overwhelming majority of the world in support of Palestinian rights, the right to self-determination, our right to have a state status in the UN, a member state in the UN, 143 countries. And on the other hand, you have the US standing almost alone against that, together with Israel and a couple of other smaller countries, being isolated. And the U.S. is going out of its way always to shield Israel and to prevent its own policy. I mean, it's so telling. It's so telling. You know, that vote and that speech by the Israeli representative, that shredding of the U.N. Charter, what was he objecting? What was the Israeli representative objecting? What was the U.S. objecting? Was it objecting to Hamas? Was it objecting to violence? Was it objecting to? No, Israel was and is and has been objecting to the creation of a Palestinian state. That's the objection. The rest is details. The rest is symptoms. And that objection, that block of our right to self-determination, our right to sovereignty and independence, our right and our duty to liberate our land and live in a state of our own, is the heart of the matter. That's the root cause. And why would the U.S. object to that? And then the whole thing becomes about certain periods of our history. 7th of October, Second Intifada, First Intifada. That's the key part. And I believe that moment has revealed much. And I think I can confirm for you that we will build on that historic moment. We must thank all the nations that have come in support of the state of Palestine and its status in the UN. And we will come back. We will come back to the Security Council. We will come back to the General Assembly. We will come back every session, if needed, every time, every day, until we are admitted as a UN, because the majority of the world have spoken, because Palestine has the right, meets the criteria of the UN Charter for membership. And the U.S. has no right and has no business. The United States and the administration of the U.S. has no right and has no business of objecting to Palestinian right to self-determination. They
Ambassador
don't.
Hassan Zumlaat, we want to thank you very much for being with us, Palestinian ambassador to the United Kingdom. Interestingly, the speech of the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations was canceled, to Linda Thomas Greenfield, both to and also invitations withdrawn by Xavier University and University of Vermont because of student objections to American support for Israel. President Biden's expected to address Morehouse, the historically black college, next weekend, and there's rising protest around that address. This is Democracy Now! Coming up next, Ben Crump, a Florida airman, is killed by police. I'm Amy Goodman. A warning to our listeners and viewers, this next story includes video and descriptions of police killing a man in his apartment. In Florida, the family members of a 23-year-old Air Force member killed by a sheriff's deputy May 3rd are demanding justice. Newly released body camera footage shows Roger Fortson answering the door of his own apartment and immediately being fatally shot by an Okaloosa County officer.
Sheriff's office, open the door! Step out. Drop the gun! Drop the gun!
He's over there!
Drop the gun!
I don't have it!
312, shots fired. Suspect down.
Do not move!
312, get EMS my location.
Roger Fortson's relatives say the deputy arrived at the wrong apartment, which authorities have refuted. This is Roger Fortson's mother, Chantemeki Fortson.
So to this sheriff department that took my gift, that had so many accolades inside of him, to err is human and to forgive is divine. I need you guys to tell the truth about my son.
For For more, we're joined by Ben Crump, civil rights attorney representing Fortin's family. Ben, welcome back to Democracy Now! So if you can really take us through what happened here, what happened when the airman was on Zoom with his girlfriend sitting in his apartment?
Yes, Amy, it is tragic on so many levels. U.S. Airman Roger Fortson was an American hero. He was a patriot. He was a young man who was doing all the right things. He was trying to provide for his mother, his 10-year-old sister, Harmony, his 16-year-old brother, Andre. He was highly intelligent. He was special ops. He was the best that we had to offer America. And on this day, there was a call about a domestic disturbance. Well, we know it was the wrong apartment for many reasons, but the main one being Roger was in his apartment by himself doing FaceTime video with his girlfriend, and the only he was the only person. He had his little dog in the apartment. And so the officer came, knocked on the door. Roger and them didn't know who it was. She never heard who it was, but Roger opened the door with his licensed, registered gun, because the Second Amendment applies to black people too. And he kept the gun in a down position, opened the door. The officer tells him to step back. He starts to step back. And then immediately he is executed by six shots from the sheriff's deputy without giving any verbal command to drop the weapon, put your hands up or anything. It's not to that young man is lying down, down dying, where he says, drop the weapon, drop the weapon. And Roger's even trying to comply after he's been shot. He's, I don't have it, it's over there. And then the FaceTime video of his girlfriend is just horrible, Amy, because you hear him saying, I can't breathe, and you hear the police officer steady barking orders talking about, don't move, don't move. And we lose this young man, which was one of the brightest lights for his family and our community.
You know, Ben Crump, this reminds me of, and many people, of the killing of the 26-year-old accountant, Botham Jean, who was eating ice cream. I think he was watching TV when a police officer came in 2018, Amber Geiger. She thought she was entering her own apartment in the apartment complex, but she was just confused and entered his apartment and killed him because she said she thought he was an intruder in her apartment.
Yeah, it reminds me of Botham Jean. It reminds me of Breonna Taylor. Reminds me of Atiana Jefferson. Any number of black people who were, young black people who were just in their apartments minding their business when the police killed them unjustifiably. And this is tragic because that video is so horrific. I mean, he doesn't give him any chance. He immediately starts to shoot and kill him. And so it's raising many issues. And the military needs to make sure his reputation is without stain. As his mother said, the first report went out, Amy, said, well, he was killed in self-defense. There was a domestic dispute and so forth. And there's nothing to suggest that. So the Okaloosa Sheriff's Department needs to not try to assassinate his character now that they have assassinated his person. And we have to honor him as a patriot and a hero and have accountability for this police officer and this apartment complex. At the beginning of the video, they asked the leasing representative, where's the disturbance coming from? She says, I'm not sure. They asked her again. She's still not sure. But then the third time, she says, it's an apartment 1401, which is his apartment. And they go, and we see what happened, and we would not let them sweep this under the rug.
So what are the authorities saying? Can you explain why they went into his apartment?
Well, they're saying because they were told it was a domestic dispute. But he was the only one there, him and his dog. He was on FaceTime with his girlfriend. So they need to go ahead and admit that it was the wrong apartment and quit trying to justify this unjustifiable killing. I mean, it's just horrible. His funeral is going to be Friday in Atlanta, Georgia, and hopefully by then they won't continue to have this incorrect narrative that they went to the right apartment, because as long as they do that, that is dishonoring his legacy and his commitment to being a person who respected the rules, respected authority, did the right things, and was one of our brightest spots, a true American patriot. And he should be honored and remembered as such.
Finally, Ben Crump, the U.S. Special Operations Affairs, I mean, he was a U.S. airman, released a press release saying our focus is on the senior airman Fortson's family, providing necessary resources. We respect the legal process and the family's right to secure representation. Can you talk about the significance of the U.S. military acknowledging and monitoring this killing?
Well, I think it's very important. As this young African-American airman who was a senior airman, he is part of the military family. And so we would expect that they would stand up and make sure he's given the same dignity and respect that you would afford a military personnel who has done everything appropriate to serve his country. The fact that, you know, we haven't heard from the NRA. I mean, we're in Florida. Florida encourages citizens to have guns and have their right to the Second Amendment. Well, it should be foreseeable for police officers. If you're coming to somebody's house in a state like Florida where citizens have guns, well, how are you supposed to interact with them when they're exercising their basic constitutional rights? And that's why you have many people in our community saying, hold on, where's the NRA? This is a Second Amendment issue. He was a registered gun owner. He was militarily trained. He was responsible. He respected authority. This is the type of person you would want to have own a gun, but you haven't heard anything from them. So hopefully the military will continue to shine the light on this to make others stand up and decry this tragic killing of this innocent young American patriot.
And finally, Ben Crump, on a totally different issue, last Malcolm X Day, on the assassination, the anniversary of the assassination of Malcolm X, and we're moving into that this week, May 19th, you announced the family's lawsuit. And I'm wondering if the mayor of New York City, one of the things you've requested is that the release of key evidence in the assassination. Has Mayor Adams, a former police officer, responded?
Not in a formal manner, but we expect to have updates for you very soon.
Very good. When we come back, we are coming back here to New York, but we're going to be looking at another police killing, the police killing of a 19-year-old teenager who called 911 himself asking for help. He was in a mental health crisis. The police came and shot him dead in front of his mother and brother. Stay with us.
Trees are full of new leaves, offering me, offering green tears. Trees are full of new leaves, offering me, offering green tears. Holy song of all the words he sung.
for blue like hers. I wish the black dog's eye was not with me day and night. I spat apple pips back of the soil, press the dirt down with the bite of my heel, and wished for another color to spoil, to reveal.
Trees are full of
I Want to Be Fine by Broadcast. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We end today's show looking at another case that set off protests and demands for justice. The police fatal shooting of Wen Rosario, a 19-year-old Bangladeshi teen who lives here in New York City, in Queens. A warning to our listeners and viewers, the story contains descriptions and footage of police violence, including sounds of gunshots. In late March, Wen Rosario called 911 asking for help, experienced a mental health crisis. Two NYPD officers arrived at the family's home, one of them shooting Wen at least four times, less than 2 minutes after entering his house. The NYPD claimed Rosario came at the officers with a pair of scissors when they fired at him. But now police body cam footage has been released. It shows Wen was standing on the other side of the kitchen, several feet away from the officers. They've been identified as Matthew Cianfrocco and Salvatore Alonghi. The officers first repeatedly tased Wen. His mother, Nathan Eva Costa, attempted to shield her son, begging police not to shoot him. One officer is heard yelling, quote, "Tell her to get the F out of the way." This is a portion of the body cam footage. You can see Wen's mother begging and pleading with police officers not to shoot her son. Notan Eva Costa, an immigrant from Bangladesh, spoke at a news conference outside New York City Hall last week.
These police were grown men with guns. They didn't have to kill my child. I tried to protect my son. I begged the police not to shoot, but the police still killed him.
Wynn's younger brother is also heard telling the police officers Wen was having an episode and didn't even know what he's doing. This is 17-year-old Ucho Rosario at last week's news conference.
My name is Ucho, and Wen was my older brother, and I miss him every day. Wen wasn't just my brother, he was my friend and someone that I could talk to and a role model. In the morning, he would usually wake up before me, and when I woke up, he used to give me a big hug. Alonghi and Cianfrocco stole that hug from me, from my brother. Wen had a strong sense of right and wrong. He would always try to do the right thing. He was determined and disciplined. When we first moved to the country, we didn't really know what basketball was. And when we used to play basketball, people used to make fun of us in the court. So Wen spent months training himself so he could become better than the people that he played with. And in a few months, he became better than the people that played for their whole life. The people that's supposed to serve and protect us are the ones that's killing us. The police was so aggressive and reckless that they could have killed my mom and me too in our own house. If anyone that wasn't a cop did what Alonghi and Francisco did, they would have already been in jail. But yet, they're still collecting their paycheck from the city like nothing happened.
Wen's family and social justice community organizers are demanding the officers be fired and criminally charged. For more, we're joined by New York City Councilmember Shahana Hanif, co-chair of the Progressive Caucus and the Task Force to Combat Hate. She's the daughter of Bangladeshi immigrants, the first Bangladeshi-American New York City council member. Welcome to Democracy Now! It's great to have you with us. You were one of the people at the news conference Tell us more about what happened. I mean, how many times when someone is in a mental health crisis, their family members call, Wynn called himself and said, I need help.
That's right. What we've seen and learned from the family is that Wynn had called 911 in an acute mental health crisis. And as soon as officers arrived, two officers arrived on the scene, but we see that they were upset. Their tone was that of cruelty. And right from going up into the house, meeting Wynn and his brother and his mother, they shot him. They killed him. He needed help. And what they did instead is kill him.
And explain, I mean, Ucho says it very clearly, Wynn's younger brother. I mean, Wynn was only 19 years old. Ucho says, they could have killed me and my mother. I mean, they were wrapped around their Wynn's mother, put her body in front, and they kept saying that she should get the F out of the way. She didn't want him to be killed.
Right, and no mother should have to experience this pain. We have seen one too many times. Mohamed Ba, Amadou Diallo, the way in which police have murdered black and brown folks in New York City. And Notan Iva Costa's shielding her son is such a poignant image of what it means to black and brown mothers when police is responding at the scene. Instead of asking to understand what had happened or saying that we are here to help, saying anything to just assure the family that they were here in response to a call, they ignored, they used expletives to curse out the family. It is not okay what took place. And right now we're seeing the family demand justice and accountability.
So Ucho says that he and his mother were treated like criminals. Explain.
Right. Again, the response from the police and also after the murder, having to sit through interrogation as if they had been the perpetrators of this crime, and then not to get a word of sympathy from the mayor or the administration. And what we've witnessed from our top police executives is harassment of journalists, harassment of everyday New Yorkers, and even elected officials. They should be doing their job.
The mayor of New York, Eric Adams, is a former police officer. Has he spoken to you? You're a city council member. You are Bangladeshi American. This family is Bangladeshi. You spoke at the news conference.
No, he has not. And this assistant with how he has treated working class people, he made a campaign promise to expand New York City's mental health response team in situations like Wynn Rosario's, and they have failed. They have failed everyday New Yorkers. Families like Rosario's will not be calling 911. And that is a direct result of this incident. And also, the Bangladeshi community is one of the fastest growing working class face of New York. And right now, we are reeling with the pain of the lack of empathy, the lack of really seeing the mayor show leadership as to what was committed by his NYPD.
Can you talk about, overall, how the city police are supposed to respond? They get well over 100,000 mental health calls a year. How should they be responding in a case like this? I mean, this one clearly identified as a mental health crisis.
Sure. And that's where activists, advocates, and elected officials like myself, progressive caucus members, are saying we need to be better attuned to what the needs are of folks calling 911. What we learned is that the Rosario family had not been new to this precinct. So someone like him should have signaled to the NYPD or that precinct that, hey, we need to bring in some social workers or some mental health practitioners so that he gets the full assistance that he needs on demand. Other cities have shown us the way to do this. New York City has a very small pilot called Be Heard in some zip codes. So we can be expanding that program. We have not. And what we do consistently is send the NYPD in situations that demand a mental health response. And that just should not be the case. They are not equipped to provide the de-escalation needed. However, they could have de-escalated. They are trained. Police officers are trained to de-escalate. They did not have to tase him as many times as they did shoot him at all. There are other parts of the body. If they were truly threatened by Nguyen in that moment of him holding up the scissor, they could have done many other things that they have been trained to do to de-escalate that would not have resulted in Nguyen dying.
Councilmember Hanif, you were arrested in October along with a coalition of New Yorkers calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. The New York City Council has not passed a ceasefire resolution, though many other cities have. Can you talk about that? You also visited the Columbia student encampment.
I did. I've been calling for a ceasefire with many of my colleagues in the Progressive Caucus, primarily. And you're right, a ceasefire resolution has not passed. And I have been vocal about feeling deep disappointment and shame by New York City, which would be the largest city to demand a ceasefire. However, we are seeing what the results of not having a ceasefire resolution has yielded. Students across universities, Columbia, City College, I'm a former Brooklyn College student, campuses all across New York City are demanding divestment from Israel, a ceasefire, and better from their elected officials. And having been to the encampment at Columbia, I witnessed an anti-war movement. I witnessed what it means to demand an end to genocide and the killing of Palestinians, and demanding the release of all hostages. So we are witnessing New Yorkers, students, young people in their early 20s saying this needs to end.
Finally, on the issue of immigration, can you discuss Mayor Adams' dealing with asylum seekers? I think something like 200,000 immigrants have come to New York since 2022. You're sponsoring a bill that would repeal the mayor's policy limiting shelter stays for newly arrived asylum seekers to 30 to 60 days. If you can explain more.
Sure. The legislation that I've authored is the Stop Shelter Evictions Act. This mayor has demanded an arbitrary, cruel cap on how many days asylum seekers can stay at a shelter. And what we're witnessing as a result of this counterproductive, again, there's no precedent as to why 30 and why 60 days. 30 days would be for adults, single adults, and 60 days for families with children. And New Yorkers are experiencing now the uptick in street homelessness, many more people in our subways, and also school-age children. 1,000 school-age children have been reported to leave the public school system as a result of these evictions. So my bill would reverse this counterproductive policy.
We want to thank you so much for being with us. We'll continue to follow that bill. Shahana Hanif is New York City Council Member, co-chair of the Progressive Caucus and the Task Force to Combat Hate. She's the first Bangladeshi-American New York City Council Member. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Is that a normal part of your singing?
That's the way I've always sung this morning.
Are there subliminal duets?
Absolutely not.
The Metal Meltdown. a show that brings you melody-driven heavy metal from around the world. Melting your ears every Monday night from 8 to 10 p.m. right here on CJSF 90.1 FM.